my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
I found well, welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Jack Silverman on the board. We have Mr. Brendan Cornan, I believe. SP Futures up 16.
I'm here.
How are you? SP Futures up 16. They were down 10 last night when I looked. So we've recovered yet again. NASDAQ Futures up 53. Kramer says the market has no conscience. Brendan, what do you think of that?
Well, I think I have to agree with him right now. The way, how can you anticipate the way the market's been moving up and down over the last couple of months? Sometimes not having a conscience is a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, you could be a looter.
That's true.
I am so flummoxed by this, Brendan, I can't even. I had to take time off last night from going from the computer from person to person. I listened all day yesterday too. We had one African-American person after another talking about racism and so forth and how people have to do more and more. And I get it. I come from the South Side. I mean, I get it. It strikes me, as I age, I'm not so sure how gracefully, Brendan, that the tactics of the people criticizing other people are exactly the same as the people they're criticizing, and they don't even know it. They're mirror images of each other. The policemen who judge every black person as being the same as the one they just saw the day before,
yep,
is no different than judging every white police officer the same way. It's the same thing. Why don't people see that? Do you have to get to a certain age to see that the tactics of one side are exact same as the other, and they're both deplorable?
Well, what's that old saying that wisdom is for the elderly and wasted on the youth? Because the youth don't understand, just from experientially, that that things change over time, and to look for things like you just talked about.
I listen to the two people I think have no business being in office. One is Trump and one is Pritzker, arguing yesterday. And did neither of these guys get it at all, Brendan? I mean, it's not like, you know, the people on this show are that. The difference is we try and find, despite all the different places people come from to come on the show, we try and find some semblance of logic and truth. And it's interesting that the people from the far left contribute to that, the people from the far right contribute to that. And we try and do something. And yet I'm listening to Trump yesterday, you know, take back the streets, blah, 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 and, you know, make the place sort of into a war zone. He sort of wouldn't care in it. That's sort of not the answer. But the other idea that you close a whole city, for God's sake, in London, they didn't close during when the Germans were bombing them, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
This is not any kind of answer. This is not any kind of a long-term answer. I actually listened to a few of the African-American people on CNBC yesterday, and a couple guys that they should have just taken them right off the air were saying stuff like, well, you know, so what, a little bit of broken glass and a few missing items are a small price to pay to get the truth out or something. I'm going, it's not your
Who
glass.
Who said that?
One of the buffoons on CNBC. He said, no, that's a price you have to pay once in a while when there's a protest. There's always like a bad person there, and so you can't, you know, he wasn't glorifying it. He was just saying, you know, it's, we can sweep up the glass, it's, you know, but the protests are important and everybody's got to, you know, what do we expect everybody exactly to
that's
do?
That's a ridiculous statement.
Yeah, oh yeah,
this,
oh, absolutely.
This, gone, this
absolutely.
Gone far beyond protests when you're talking about looting stores and looting stores in the neighborhoods where people are the most oppressed, both financially, economically,
right.
and socially oppressed. And yet you're looting and destroying the businesses that, that they're, that, that they've worked hard to establish.
Well, you have two absurd leaders here in the state, Lori and Jay, a week ago are fining people for going to church. And now they're giving a pass to people raiding people's liquor stores and furniture stores and you name it.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially a pass. Like the, yeah. the, I'm not talking about the people that are peaceful that are doing, but people that are peaceful also have to know that it's up to you to discipline the people in like your protest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, I mean, I, when I was, when we were young, Brendan, we were young at one time. Whenever anybody's parents were out of town or somebody's grandmother or something, we always had a party, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and you know, it'd be drinking in a poker game. It'd be something, but I don't recall ever somebody not invited or some random knucklehead ever showing up on one of these things ever. And then later, I went to one of my buddies who's at a graduation party for one of his kids. Brendan, it was in a full. I didn't go there to get into a fight. I was one of the bouncers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole neighborhood's pouring in with beer, and you tell these kids today, "Hey, get out of here with the beer." They just walk right by you. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's like,
yeah.
it's a, I mean, somehow or another, I think that you need to, A, let people do their protesting peacefully, because that is America. I also think that when you see people pulling up in their trucks in front of a liquor store, that the, even though you don't have the police that day, you get the license numbers, you get the people on facial rec, and you know, next week you tap them on the shoulder and you say, by the way, here's your fine,
mm-hmm.
here's for what you did. And we would like a check today, or the car is coming with us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this you can't live like this, Brendan. I mean,
particularly when the cars and the license plates are from out of state, and you're looking at folks who come in. Like there was one news story about somebody who came up with a U-Haul,
yeah.
and just parked outside a store and loaded stuff into the U-Haul and drove off.
We drove in yesterday.
That was definitely premeditated. When you come up with a U-Haul and park in front of the store, you're going to lose.
When we drove in yesterday morning, there was a guy on Madison on the expressway. They must have chased him. He was in a U-Haul pickup truck, and he whacked into a light pole. There was all police all around him. I mean, and yet...
There's justice.
Yeah, now a week ago, I mean, is this difficult because does Lori think that this is her base or something? Is it the same as Trump? Not wanting to insult his base, she doesn't want to insult hers. Is it the same thing? That's what I'm concerned about. I mean, look at two opposite ends of the spectrum, Trump and Lori Lightfoot, and yet the tactics are the same. Don't piss off my voters.
I don't think that Lori's trying to hold to the don't piss off my voters. I think she's looking for solutions right now. We can argue whether it's effective or whether it's the right way to do it, but I think that she really has the interests of the city at heart.
Yep.
That she's trying to protect the city in a way that she can.
But you know who she reminds me of a lot, Brendan? And I happen to think she's a very bright lady, and I think she has a good heart. She reminds me of the black Jimmy Carter. She
mm-hmm.
can't get away from her little group that she only listens to, and that group has no experience. They have no knowledge of how to run a city. None. I mean, the idea that we're shut 2 days here now and you can't... I had to go through a National Guard checkpoint at 5:30 this morning to get in the city. What does she think people down here are going to do for their rent and for things? Is she chasing people? If she couldn't do a worse job, she's chasing people out of here.
I understand your point, but I don't know how many other alternatives she has because of what's happened over the last couple of days with the looting in different parts of the city. And we've seen that the groups seem to migrate from the downtown area because of the police protection down there and because of the limitations down there out to other parts of the city, whether it's uptown or whether it's around Lincoln and Wrightwood and places like that, or the south side or the west side where a lot of the damage is done. I think she's searching for answers, and I think that she's trying to do the best she can right now. I don't think she's in it, making a decision to throw people out or have people move out of the city. I think she's trying to really contain it right now.
Well, when we were young, we used to have these riots. We did it for Martin Luther King, and Danny Davis was on last night, a representative. I'm not a big fan, mm-hmm. but I don't think he has ever done much, but that's another story. He's still a pretty good guy. He was talking about the riots on Roosevelt Road, Martin Luther King, and how those blocks are still empty. There still has not been mm-hmm. any building. This is not something you come back from, Brennan. This is stuff where these neighborhoods, the scars stay there forever.
Yeah.
And I remember reading stories, and it said the only way you can affect something like this is serious amount of law enforcement right when it starts. You have to overwhelm mm-hmm. the issue. And we're not doing that. We're not doing that at all. We don't want to engage.
Well, I think what happened with that is that the police were at the ready, but not taking effective action, not taking aggressive action when the protests first started. And once the looting started, that first night, the things got a little out of control. And then it's grown since then. Almost every night there's been more problems. But, you know, in 68, and I remember the riots in 68.
Yeah, I do too.
I remember there was a guy who lived two doors down from me who was a police lieutenant. And I remember him coming back from, it was at the time of the Democratic Convention. He worked downtown. And I remember him coming back with blood all over his white shirt from getting cracked in the head. I don't know that aggressive police action immediately would have been much different in the result as far as how much looting was done or ill feelings towards the police and towards the demonstrators. I agree with you, though, that I think what really has to be decided upon is who are the looters and who are the protesters.
Right.
And it seems like there is a difference, that there, at the start of every day in the afternoons, there are protesters who are peaceably marching or peaceably protesting, which is their First Amendment right, and I think they should do that. It's when the bad apples come out and start damaging and looting the stores that something else has to be done. And I also agree with your point that there should be some of the leaders from the protest movement pointing out by saying that guy started the riot. That guy, that's the guy you want. And if they have a video, if they have a phone shot of him, all the more to prove to the police. Like, there was just one guy arrested now from suburban Illinois who was caught inciting a riot with Molotov cocktails both in Minneapolis and in Chicago. That's the guy whose rear end should be thrown in jail.
Well, this whole, I honestly believe, and I, you know, again, this is hard for me to roll through this because my family was, you know, pretty much all policemen. And I get the feeling, Brennan, I have a hair up my behind, I understand, because years ago, PTI was hit with a online, you know, people stole money from us online. And it's happened to virtually everybody I know at some point in the industry or every bank or everybody. And when you call the Chicago police, you get laughed at.
Mm-hmm.
And I know if you call, if somebody breaks into the car in front of your house, even though you're paying a bazillion dollars in taxes, they give you a number and say, call your insurance company. They want no part of it. And this whole idea, whenever these policemen go and take these tests, you know, I don't care if you're black, blue, from the moon, or Mars. I said, and I'm willing to have, in my world, I'm willing to have schools open at night to teach people have classes on what you want to be for a policeman. I'll do all that stuff. I'll do everything I possibly can to even this out, where if somebody wants to do this stuff, the last thing I would ever do, Brandon, is if 500 people take the test, to not take the top 100. I don't mm-hmm. care if they're all black, they're all white, or whatever, because I don't want the bottom 40 on there because they are another color, or they are another religion, or they're from Mars. I mean, I'll give everybody every opportunity I can to tutor for the test, to do something, to get there on their own. But at the end of the day, I think our police department has no... How is it that these bands of thugs can organize and be at some place, and our police don't seem to be able to... They were one step behind all weekend. in my mind. Why? They were one step behind all weekend. Everywhere these guys were first, they were last. Now, we don't. Do we have nobody? I mean, we went to Bacchanalia's one night before it closed for the COVID, which, whatever, is another story. But I'm sitting there talking to this guy, and he was not... I can't even say I really liked the guy at all, Brendan. Matter of fact, I didn't, because he went to my high school, and he rattled off who his friends were, and they weren't my friends, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But the dude was... And he was not the brightest bulb either. He was into cyber crime. That's what he did, and he is a consultant. He had been a Chicago policeman, and he realized that most of the crime was now cyber crime. And he said that, you know, 85% of the money being stolen is being stolen cyber crime, and the policemen don't even look at it. So he gets himself an office somewhere near the jail, and he's a cyber crime consultant to the city, and they pay him a fortune to do this stuff because they're only policemen that can. And he was giving me the whole story. He goes, yeah, we don't teach anybody any of this stuff. He says, our guys are designed to you know, somehow, you know, stop the old lady from her purse getting stolen or something. But where the real money's being stolen, we don't have... I think our guys are amazingly behind the times on purpose. And I don't know. I don't know why that is. I mean, we're not... I mean, and we say the FBI has this and that, but this is not... I mean, Matt Weber, when he had his... he went to, I don't know where he was, some saloon... And he put his, you know, his ATM card in, and all of a sudden he finds out that somebody stole, you know, money from, well, yeah, I don't know, I think he shagged down a policeman. He says, you know, something wrong with his ATM card. And the guy goes, what do you want me to do about it? You know, machine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, I don't know what exactly we're doing, what the training's like, what, but somehow or another, the solution to everything is not shut your business down. What would possess anybody right now to say we're moving to Chicago?
Oh, I don't think there is a lot to say. Move to Chicago right now. And I think I agree with you. It's going to get worse as a result of this when the bills come due and we have to start paying and looking for some semblance of a balanced budget in the next couple of years because of all the cost and lost revenue. It's going to be horrendous.
What do you think your man Jay is, if he wins this amendment on the ballot, what's he talking about? 30%? 20%? It's going to bail his ass out?
I don't know what it is, but I think that, yeah, I think that what's happening right now is a death knell for that proposal on the ballot. I just cannot imagine people willing to turn over to people like Mike Madigan and Jay Pritzker and Don Harmon the ability to raise taxes. And even if the comment is that the initially that it'll be those in the higher rates and those in the middle and lower rates may even pay less taxes, that's not going to last for very long, and anybody who thinks it is a fool.
I don't, but what are you going to, at this point, I mean, reason why I asked Brendan, for the listeners, I mean, I think most of you know, but Brendan's an expert on essentially public finance, and, or used to be before he retired. We don't know what he is an expert in now, but anyway, we think he remembers some of it, or maybe all of it. What in God's name, and what are we going to do, Brendan? I mean, are we going to raise the taxes on my place from, you know, 25 to 50? Are we going to, the person who's got the $56,000 house in Park Forest that's paying over $5,000 in taxes, are we going to make it 10? What are we going to do?
There's a limit to what you can do. You know, at a certain point, if the value of your house and the amount of your mortgage is double or triple by the amount of the taxes you're paying, it doesn't make sense. You know, it's a conundrum for those of us who believe that owning your own home was the American dream and one that you aspire to. That's what I grew up with. You know, that when you one of the signs of adulthood is that you have your own house. But if you're being priced out of that and this is a problem with neighborhoods being gentrified, but it's also a question of how much property taxes are being raised. That's why for many years, you know, Richie Daley and other people in City Hall thought that was the third rail. The electric third rail would be raising taxes to anybody in the city. That contributed a lot to the problem we have right now with pensions. But still, your point is well taken. At a certain point when the amount of taxes is so excessive that people can't pay them. You know, you figure you buy a house and, you know, you, whatever the price of the house is, you know, $100,000, $200,000, but, if, if your property taxes are $5,000, $10,000, $30,000 a year, that's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, in my lifetime, I watched in my industry. You know, it doesn't affect investors to a huge degree, a little bit, but don't know and don't care most of them. The way the markets function. I mean, I was involved in the CBOE, where an awful lot of people made a pretty nice living in a competitive marketplace. Now the rules have all changed. PTI's offices are right next to the exchanges. We used to take people on floor tours. We used to do all kinds of things and show people how I believe the market worked and worked well. And now there are no floor tours. There are no floors. And now we're sitting down. We actually are in a nice building downtown, and people here are terrific. I think their taxes in this building, and this is by rumor, have gone up like 2.5 times in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the rent's going to continue to go up. At some point, what am I doing here? Why don't I get a storefront in Portage, for God's sake, or someplace where I get in the afternoon, I can go play golf. I can do something if I get my swing back. And what am I doing here? I mean, the guy who let us in this morning, because of course you can't get in the front door. Because it's all boarded up. And he says he's painting a house for a guy in Indiana because the place is gorgeous. It was $200,000 and his taxes are $2,500.
Uh-huh.
I mean, in my neighborhood, Lincoln Park, you got, I'm going to say where I live, I'm not positive what the taxes are in a building, but I'll say 22, 25. For God's sake, Brendan, when there was a park down the block, when you actually had activities in the summer for the kids and stuff, people are waiting all night long in the cold in January, having like a little party, waiting in a line to get their kids in the daycare center.
Yeah.
I'm paying $25,000 in taxes. I'm not freezing my ass off in a line waiting to get my kid in a class. Start up another class. And what are you doing?
Well, we were in Arizona right before the COVID shutdown happened, and we looked at some different houses over there, both in the Tucson area and in the Scottsdale area. And by comparison, we saw this house. It was newly renovated. Well, renovated within the last couple of years, but really in good shape. It was on the edge of the Venetian, which is a large premier resort in Scottsdale. It backed up to part of the golf course, one of the tees on the Venetian. It was 2 acres. The house was at the edge of it, and it was about 2,500 square feet. And the taxes on that for Scottsdale School District were less than $7,000.
Now, if I was playing on a course and I hit an errant shot, could I bonk you?
Well, there was a netting up by off the tee box, but I could probably break a window at that because of how bad of a golfer I am.
But, I know I played out there
the
a couple times.
The owner had a big net up that blocked shots from the tees, but he did say that occasionally he would find a golf ball in his yard.
I was at a few places down there where I think the guys like at the swimming pools were filling up with balls. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I had a good friend who lived on the block from there, and he would often get balls in his backyard. In fact, he was 2 hours away from this house, and he would often have a collection of golf balls. Some really nice golf balls, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, if you're going to pay $400 to play golf, you could probably get some pretty good golf balls.
Yeah.
Just saying. But Brendan, it's easy to criticize, you know, as they used to say in the pit, the Irish saying that the snipes are grousing, right? But this whole thing that's happened this year and the mistakes in my mind with this virus, the way you shut things down, the way, you know, they seemingly had no regard when you look at the decisions they did make. 48% of the deaths are in nursing homes, and they didn't protect the people who were at risk. And I think we have amazingly horrendous nursing homes in the area that are Medicaid. I've been to a couple of them, and they're pretty bad. I think the carnage in those places was just dramatic. We're probably never going to hear about it. Yet the people who are walking around, the young people, have figured it out. This virus doesn't affect them, Brendan. And you're expecting people to stay in jail in case they might go to a nursing home. I mean, it'll affect you and me, you know, not feeling good. But, I mean, young people, I mean, if you and I were were 20, would we not go play basketball tonight?
That's a tough call, because I think, especially now when people have been cooped up for a couple of months, it's really challenging to say stay home, and especially when you're looking at what seems to be the effects. Although younger people are getting very sick and dying, not in as high numbers as the elderly or with underlying conditions, but it is still happening.
Brennan, whenever you see somebody get on there and say it doesn't affect young people, they'll trot some young person out that had a problem with it like an hour later on TV. This is all BS. It's all hype across the boards. Your only communication with people now is across tweets and across TV because people can't get out. Mm-hmm. I mean,
even if you look at the numbers, including everybody, you know, an 80% chance of if you contract the coronavirus, according to the early numbers, 80% are asymptomatic or mildly symptomatic. And so of the other 20%, there's still a relatively low risk of death.
You know what the jackass numbers are? The average age of people dying of coronavirus that have died with it, not died of it, died with it, 79.
That seems a little bit high to me.
Well, I'm gonna dig through here and make sure I'm right. Hey, hang with us. We're going to have Joel. You can be my co-host, and we're back on because we have no Kenny today, just you and me. We have more stuff to talk about. SP Futures up 14. Be right back with Mr. Joel and Cannon.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. So Jack Silverman on the board. We made it down here. Jack had to walk over to LaSalle Street. It's the only bridge that's up or down so you can walk across. This is like, you're probably too young, Jack. Have you ever seen the movie Escape from New York where they had the tunnels and the bridges closed? You couldn't get off Manhattan?
No, I have not.
We're doing the same thing with Chicago here. Anyway, S&P Futures up 13. NASDAQ Futures up 39. Dow Futures up 141. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 432. Now, they were closed yesterday, but that's 3.7%. FTSE up 64, that's 1%. CAC around up 95, that's 2%. Just pouring money into this. Nikkei up 263, 1%. Shanghai up 5, call that, well, 0.2%. Hang Seng up 263, 1.1. So rallies all over the place. Bonds, 0.67, they won't move. Bund, minus 0.41, it doesn't move. And in Japan, right around zero again today, a little bit positive. Positive 0.005. We've got oil up 80 cents, 36.24. It's highest we've seen in a while. Went up 93 cents, 39.25. Natural gas, 178. RBOB, 110. It was under a dollar a week ago. And we've got gold. I think gold's down a little bit this morning. No, it's up $2. It was down when we came in. 17.52. Silver actually down 2 cents, 18.80. Wow, but still a huge run up in silver. Copper, 247. So inching up. Which maybe mean, it could mean a lot of things. Could be inflation or it could mean China's coming back a little bit. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Not much traffic because you got the place shut down here.
Yeah, not all too much traffic, but we do have one major thing to report. The exit ramp at the Stevenson North at Lakeshore Drive is closed, which is causing a lot of traffic because all of it is pushed onto southbound Lakeshore Drive. So a lot of traffic on the south part of Lakeshore Drive is, very slow.
So Jack, if you want to come this way, why would you be going south on Lakeshore Drive, except you were told to?
I don't know.
So I want to go to L.A., but really you should go towards New York. Okay. Just saying.
I mean, I'm not the one making the rules, so you got to take it up with Lori up there.
Oh, there you go. All right.
For weather, we're looking pretty good this morning. 68 degrees, partly cloudy with a high of 90, so it's going to be very hot today. And in Phoenix, it is 87 degrees, partly cloudy with a high of 108. This day in sports, going to 1997, Chicago White Sox beat the Milwaukee Brewers 8-5. But instead of talking about the 13-run score, we're going to talk about Albert Bell's 0-3, which ended his 27-game hit streak for the White Sox.
Really?
Yep.
Joel, you with us?
Good morning, Chief.
How are you
doing on this Tuesday morning?
I got some good stuff for you. Brennan, you still with us?
Yes, I am.
All right, so there I was last night. With nothing to do, of course, since we're still sort of locked in. but we had to leave the office early because we're the only people in the building. Anyway, so I turn on, I didn't even know they did this. The year is 1969, and I turn on the Cub game. The Cubs are playing, who the hell are they playing?
Phillies.
And, Rick Wise against Fergie Jenkins, but the Channel 9 had already been color long before this. This is a national game. I couldn't remember who the announcers were. I couldn't recognize the voice. They never said. National game, it's black and white. I didn't realize that Channel 9 was in color before the national TVs were for these games. Anyway, the thing's in black and white. And so they got Fergie against Rick Wise. And Joel, it's my kind of baseball. So, of course, since I'm bored stiff, I pull out my smartwatch or phone, and I find the stopwatch, which I've never even known I had. So I start timing the pitchers. So guess how between pitches, how fast was Rick Wise and how fast was Fergie Jenkins? Now, mind you, today, most guys are 25, 30 seconds. Some relief pitchers are 35 between pitches. What do you think these guys were?
5 to 7.
No, not that much. Rick Wise was...
I was gonna say between 10 and 15.
Rick Wise was 15, and Fergie was about under 11. They hit the catcher's mitt, I'd hit the button, he'd get the ball back, he'd look for the sign, and he'd pitch. That was it. It was like me in softball. Just get it in there, get this over with, let's get to the bar. It was my kind of baseball, just saying. But it was a 90-some degree day, and you know, why stand out there like an idiot when in that heat when you can just pitch it? But God, all my heroes, Banks, Sano, Billy Williams, Glenn Beckert, Gessinger, and the Phillies had Tony Taylor and a couple. But you know what I had forgotten, Joel, and you remember this? They were talking about the Phillies and how they only showed up with 23 people on the roster because two guys had to report to a military duty the day before. I'd forgotten all about that in the late 60s, how guys were going back and forth to the military in the major leagues. I mean, talk about a period piece, huh?
Yeah, I'm old. You're catching me on a little bit of the young end of that one, no, Chief. I don't remember, and, you know, what a time for you to mention 68 and 69 here. Don't have real vivid memories of 68. The only thing I can remember, you know, was my mom talking to my dad and saying something to the effect of, well, you know, are you worried? And we lived in a small town about 40 miles outside of Detroit. And my dad said, no, I'm not worried. It's still a ways away. So reminiscent of what's going on, though, the Detroit protest ended calmly yesterday. A 16-year-old kid stood up in front of the Detroit police department, and there was an 8 o'clock curfew, and he urged everyone to go home and to go home peacefully. So, I wish I could say the same for the rest of the country here, but that's not the case.
Well, did you see what happened in a couple of the cities? What the police did, and I was stunned at this, and just it makes me wonder. If we get the politicians out of this mess, if maybe people might solve it themselves. They got all these white policemen and all the protesters, and I forget, there was like two different cities, I should remember, I'm sorry, but if a listener knows which city. Before they started the protest, the policeman, the head police guy called over the head protest guy, whatever the hell he was, and said, you know what, why don't we take a knee with you before this even starts?
Yep. And the police, I saw that on a couple of places, and that seemed to calm the situation quite a bit.
And, The idea that white policemen somehow are with this guy in Minnesota that did this, I don't think anybody can believe that. I don't care how biggest protester you are in the world, you can't believe that. I mean, there's no way anybody, you know, this is just crazy. Anyway, Joel, the market 45% money supply growth, buddy. You think we'd ever see that again in our lifetime?
45, do I hear 50?
Actually, it's 45. You know what M1 is? Over the last couple of weeks, I'll dig it up here. It's like 81%.
And it's all going into the stock market.
Yep. Absolutely. And I got a thing today from one of my guys, Carl Denninger, that one of the reasons why the inflation isn't higher than it is, I mean, and it is, has been the velocity has dropped way down because, you know, people can't spend this much money that fast.
Yep,
they've added so much to it. But if it ever pops back up, I mean, I don't see this as a solution to anything, Joel, do you? But I mean, I don't, where does it end? I mean, you and I joked, Brendan, Joel and I have been joking for a year now that if you just double the amount of money in circulation and give everybody a $2 bill when they used to have a one, have you accomplished anything? And the answer, always out of Joel, is absolutely not. Well, we're gonna be up 25% this year, Joel. We're gonna be a quarter of that, won't we? Pretty close.
The market, the market seems to have a mind of its own and seems to be perceiving the course of events and in a different way than a lot of investors. It's very interesting the way these moves take place. overnight, you know, when the market gets down and it comes back up, it's either, you know, very, very aggressive bullish traders and programs, or I don't know what it is, but, you know, you can't, I guess if you're an investor, you know, you can't complain. The market's at a recovery high here since March. We're with the S&P's with 300 points of all-time highs. States are reopening amidst a little bit of chaos. So I guess all things will come to pass, Chief. That's what Mr. Market is telling me. So
I'm
not going to fight the market, not going to fight the Fed.
Oh, no, I'm trying to. Matter of fact, I wanted to get longer yesterday, and I was. Tell you what, there was no trade yesterday that I could find. I couldn't get a trade done anywhere. I mean, it was like the whole country shut down. It was like Christmas Eve, for God's sake. But my question to you, and this is not a shot.
No.
Why, if this is what's happening, just pouring money into the system, why do three stations all day long have a steady stream of people trying to explain why the market? Man, people must really think like Microsoft's going to make a lot of dough. Joel, it has nothing to do with that. I mean, do you think there were people sitting around TVs back in the Weimar Republic explaining how the market went up every day, or in Venezuela or in Iran? It's all currency related. It has nothing to do with people thinking anything's going to be better or not. I don't think at this level. I mean, at this carnage of cash coming in. At the end of the year, the market's going to be up 25%, and the value of the dollar vis-a-vis the market's going to be down 50%.
You know, I've got a question for both of you guys. With the market going up and people making more money, how do you reconcile that with how many people are out of work, how many businesses are losing money, and the catastrophe of small businesses and the economy being shut down with the market keep going up and other folks who are investors in the market making more money?
That's just what I'm trying to say, Joel and Brent. It's not the stock going up; it's the dollar going down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is such a hard concept to understand, especially if you live in the Midwest, because all we've ever seen is the dollar in our pocket. The dollar is sacred to us. We never. That's why I asked the really stupid question: what if we just doubled everybody's money today? What would it do? Well, everybody would say, well, gee, if Brendan owed me $20, he now owes me $40, right? It would have nothing. Mm-hmm. Would have nothing. You can't. If you ask people, can you create wealth by creating money? Everyone will tell you no. Yet, right now we're doing just that, and it's hard for people to recognize that's what we're doing. I mean, everything is your wealth is. Say, for instance. You were a good farmer and I was a good milk cow guy. We hated each other. But even though we're going to come to some agreement that 4 bushels of corn is an equal to a gallon of milk, right? Because we're going to do that even if we don't like each other. But somewhere, mm-hmm. someplace, if the milk goes up in price, we're going to have to adjust that. But right now, there's two things happening. There's a value of your house. There's a value of the money. Your house hasn't gone up any different in relation to your neighbor's car or his house. But clearly now, because the dollar is going down, and people look at it relatively, what's not going down compared to the euro? It has nothing to do with the euro because they're doing the same thing. So if everybody in the world doubled the amount of their money in circulation, all you'd do is just say every asset price is now doubled in price. I mean, this is such a hard concept to deal with. I mean, I can't say as I fully understand it, but clearly the Fed is counting on that, right? You don't see anybody saying it. Am I right, Joel, or not? I mean,
I don't think that there's any correlations, anything based on past market history that you can come up with any sensible parallels with what's going on right now.
You can in other countries. You can in other countries that have had hyperinflation.
Right. Right.
Which we don't want to be, because they didn't work out so good.
Correct.
Go ahead, Brendan.
My question, Chief, is a little bit different. That I mean, I understand your point on the money policy, but there's also a disparity in what's going on in the everyday life.
Yes.
I mean, if you look at the guy who's got a small barbershop and has poured his life savings into that to get to a point where
it's he's not being able to be a world traveler, but he's able to pay his bills. That's been shut down now for a couple of months, and he's gone through all of his savings. And in contrast, you've got the investors in the market who are making more money because of what's going on in the marketplace. How do you reconcile the disparity between those two from an income standpoint and from a bounce back in the economy when things do open up and people start going back to that barbershop?
You don't. How did you reconcile things in 1980 where a person owned four houses and somebody else rented and the houses went up in value for 4 years because of the inflation and the guy in rent just had to pay more every year? You don't.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing, right, Joel?
Well, I got a hop, but I just have a simple conclusion for you, Brendan. That barber is home day trading Zoom and Tesla, and he's not even going to want to open up his barber shop.
There you go.
So there you go. But I got to go, guys. Go blue. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, take care, bud.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, Brendan, I mean, it's the answer is the real reason that I'm so... And why do I get myself so involved in this? Because I lived it more so than anybody, because that was my job at Pullman, was to do all the inflation calculations for all the contracts we had.
Mm-hmm.
And I was painfully aware. I mean, Brendan, I was living at home. I paid rent to my, unlike people today, I paid rent for my room with my mother, right? But I was painting houses on weekends, and I was playing softball all weekend or basketball when I wasn't painting houses, and I was working at Pullman during the week. So I really didn't need my own place. I needed a room, right, which is what I had. And
mm-hmm.
then when I traded the trading floor, it was the same thing. So anyway, but when you say, how do you reconcile? How did you reconcile the fact that I had a graduate degree, was doing very well at Pullman? I think people liked me. I ended up being the financial guy at a whole plant, and the plant guys liked me. And I was making, what was I making, 18 grand a year, maybe 17.5. And at the end of the
year. Which was a good amount of money back then.
Well, not really, not for somebody grad school and everything. I mean, there was a couple guys there, the same job I did, were making 21. I mean, nobody was making 40, you're right. But the difference between 17.5 and 21 was pretty dramatic in 1977.
Right.
And,
That's my point.
Yeah, but I'm saying, so I'm doing the calculation, the union guys, and this is what, the inflation started, and after a while, inflation was around for what, 7-8 years, but it wasn't because people were making too much. But after 3 or 4 years, the unions and clearly the people work for the cities figured it out that we need an escalation clause in our contract, because it has nothing to do with how much we're earning. It has to do with inflation. At the end of the year, the dollars are worth less, so you better give us 10% more dollars if they're 10% less. So I did all these calculations, but I was non-exempt, or was I exempt? Whatever I wasn't. So I'm doing the calculation for the union guys. They're getting their 3% productivity raise, which they deserved, and they'd also be getting a 9% raise for inflation. So they're getting 12 that I'm doing the calculations for. And they say to me, well, the people in the executive group, which I was, that was a very small executive, we're going to do between 3 and 5, and we think you're doing such a great job, so you're going to get 5. And I go, I was like the Irish girl in Caddyshack. Well, thanks for nothing. So let me get this straight. I'm actually going down 7 based on inflation, and I'm one of the good guys? I mean, thanks for nothing. So that's my whole point. It's never even, ever. That's why it's something that needs to be guarded against dramatically. This time, well, in that time, your parents and my parents went to the savings account and they got more in interest than the inflation rate. So they were saved on their savings. The house, if your parents owned one, unless it was a neighborhood that, like changed or something, they got clobbered, went up 3-4% a year. At mm-hmm. least, maybe more than that. And so if you had any kind of fixed asset, the fixed asset went up. So that maybe kept pace with inflation. I don't think they went up 10% a year, but at least you made something. Stock market didn't, because all of a sudden the interest rates went so high that nobody wanted to own stock. Now this time, we've managed to keep these interest rates down, and we're lying to people on the inflation piece. So instead of an interest rate being 12, in which case everybody would get out of the stock market at these prices, Nobody would be in Amazon at when they're making, you know, 2% a year and not even paying you a dividend if you get 10% in the bank. I'm sorry, nobody would be in there. I've seen it, and so this time it's just different. It's always different, right? And this time it's going into the market and it's going into some assets, but not really gold and not really housing, but it's going into paper assets. And it's going into salaries of look at the price of baseball teams and football teams. Mm-hmm. Does anybody think that the actual worth of those places is up 4 and 5 times in the last 10 years? I mean, it's going into baseball salaries. Why does a pitcher making $25 million when 10 years ago they were? I mean, it's going
think,
into
think about a relief pitcher earning $20 million a year for how many innings
it's
a year.
It's spitting out in certain areas. I mean, the price of a ticket to a Cubs game. I mean, if you take the ticket that I had in 19, when did we start? 83, which is like $350 or something for same seat I had a few years ago when I finally gave it up. If you were to put that in a calculator, that ticket should be like $19 today, and it's like $85.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even close. So we've had these areas where this stuff has exploded. But it's not even. It's never even. That's why it needs to be guarded against. I mean, executive salaries have gone to the moon. Other people's salaries haven't. Right? Because we've managed.
So on that point about baseball salaries, do you think that the players and the owners are going to make an agreement on how to split the revenues for the rest of the season, regardless of how many games there are?
I think they're going to end up coming to an agreement for just the 1 year, but they don't want it affecting the negotiations the next year or the year after on the new CBA. Mm-hmm.
But at which point do you think they're going to go for a 50-50 split, or do you think the players want a complete pro rata split of whatever number of games they play?
Well, you're not going to get a pro rata split because the revenue is not the same. I mean, the players are ignorant if they think they're going to get that.
But that's what some of them are holding out for, that they want.
They will go
to a reduction of games, but they want pretty much a pro rata split, and the owners are offering a 50-50 split of the revenues for the year.
I first of all, you've never seen me on the side of owners ever, except this time. You can't tell, as much as I'm not a fan of Ricketts, you cannot tell me that just because you play a game in a empty Wrigley Field, you should get paid as much as when there's fans there paying. I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's pretty ignorant, I would say. I mean, it's not like you shouldn't ask. I mean, you don't ask, you don't get. I understand that part, but, mm-hmm. I think right now they don't know what the revenue is going to be. I have a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right now I think that they're going to end up playing in Arizona. Because the idea from Lori Lightfoot on down that you can't put 1,000 people in Wrigley Field that holds 45 and protect yourself from a virus that seems to be dropping by the day, is stone cold crazy. I mean, you know, this whole concept of, and we're never going to get our freedom back. I don't think we are, Brendan. I mean, I don't see these guys ever saying, go where you want to go. Do what you want to do, like you're supposed to. I mean, these guys.
Well, that's an interesting point, because I'm not sure when that is likely to happen again, when things are going to open up. But do you also think that kind of an attitude should allow for martial law?
I don't.
The one thing we didn't talk about yet was Trump's announcement yesterday about bringing in the military to solve all the problems and to mobilize the military for the states and the city, which I see as just throwing fuel on the fire right now.
Okay, but let me ask you this, my friend, because I think this is what we're trying to do here. By the way, we're absolutely not arguing. We're trying to. We're trying to get some semblance. When we have people on so far extreme ends, Trump and the other people, that who's wrong? I mean, if I'm Trump, and I'm sure he doesn't go into this level of detail, but I'm reading this stuff just Saturday night, Brendan, downtown. Okay, this is where people are paying like a boatload in taxes. Let's see, 9:30 p.m., 50 West Jackson, two people shot. Where are we here? We're at 100 East Oak, two people shot, 9:55. 9:55, 1200 West Division, okay? 9:55, 20 South Michigan. 11 o'clock, this poor guy's dead at 119 West Hubbard. 11:05, 200 North Michigan. 1140, 400 South Wells, like right in front of my office. To think, I mean, if you're Trump reading this and you're saying these idiots don't think they need any help, what's wrong with them? Mm-hmm. And yet, and then people here are making it sound like there's no problem. There's no problem?
No, I understand your point.
I don't know what my point is. I'm just trying to put the information. I don't have, I guess what I'm saying, Brent, I don't have a point. I'm just saying, one side said, we got it covered, but obviously they don't. The other guy wants to put military in here, doesn't know how to do any police work. It's against the law, it's everything else. Could we be more buffoonish on both ends?
I know. That's exactly the point, though, that neither side really is aware of or unwilling to admit that the other side may have a point.
Well, yeah, and we're going to go to our grave with that. It appears, mm-hmm. literally or figuratively.
Yeah.
Anyway, Brendan, thank you very much, buddy, for hanging the whole hour. We did some reasonable stuff, and we're just a couple of Southsiders at heart, right? Now we can
That's
just
right.
Just remember, we can't go to the driving range because we're too close together. When have you ever been 6 feet apart from anybody at driving range when I'm swinging?
Well, I try to stay far enough away that I don't get hit by the club.
Yes, absolutely. Take care of yourself, buddy. Hopefully we'll get together one of these days. Who knows? We'll
okay.
see. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? Have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Something happening here.
What well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Jack Silverman on the board. We have Mr. S&P Futures up 13, NASDAQ Futures up 31. We have Mr. Mike Hart on the phone. Jeff is off today with an errand to do. And Mike is our, I feel like Jeff is one of our best guests. He's like the Fergie Jenkins, but we got Phil Regan. We got Phil Regan coming in, the Vulture. How are you, bud?
Hey, I'm doing great, Tom. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I don't know if you remember Phil Regan, the Vulture, although he didn't he surface as the Yankees pitching coach last year or Boston's or somebody? I think he
you
did.
You know
it,
what?
Like,
I'm not really sure. That's a great question.
I think he did it like age 82 or something.
He was with the Mets last year.
The who?
Mets.
The Mets, okay. It was someplace out east. Well, that's the difference, you know, type of thing. So, Mike, what do you make of this? Where do you even want to start, buddy? I mean, we've been talking about all over the place with Brendan, but, you know, I honestly believe Mike, there's one thing I believe in the show. I believe all the news all fits together and everything affects everything else. I honestly believe that. And so it almost doesn't matter what you talk about. You're talking about the same subject, I think, in a lot
yeah,
of ways.
Absolutely. I think, you know, a good place to start, Tom, in my opinion, would be what is going on with volatility. I know I talk about volatility all the time on your show, but
yep.
To me it's the most interesting aspect of the market because it gives us a handle of, you know, looking at the price level of the market right now, it's hard to build a complete story because, hey, the market's gone down a ton. And we know, like, all these world events, the virus, all the protests, like, all these really get placed inside volatility. So we can kind of see what's going on, how all of these world events are getting digested through the volatility numbers. So what I do is I look at VIX, and that's going to be the volatility index on the market. And right now it's trading at 27.63. An average VIX print is about 18.5 if you go back to 1990. So we've been sitting here for a month and a half at around 27 to 35. And there's been a lot of opportunity to trade, actually, which is, I mean, as bad as these events are, there is a lot of opportunity out there right now to trade.
I would agree. I mean, it's especially from, and I'm going to take more of a retail slant on that. When you either manage money for retail people or, you know, they trade through you or whatever, it's very difficult, you know, for retail people to be short premium. I mean, there's ways Mike and I can put a spread together to where you have time decay coming your way when you're not, but you're technically not. You're just not naked short a straddle or something, so you can't.
Absolutely, and I think that's key there, Tom. You hit the nail on the head when you said naked short. I think naked short is difficult right now because what we say is there's unlimited risk for naked positions, which simply means if you're short, say, a straddle and the price of the stock goes up, we just don't know how high the stock's going to go because as it moves higher, it moves against you. Same thing with as it moves lower. So you don't, we call it unlimited risk. The other side of that is something called defined risk that you can do with options where you can sell undefined risk, sell, say, a straddle, which is selling a put and a call right at where the stock is trading. And then you buy a put and a call further away and you define the risk that way. So we know going in the most we can make and the most we can lose on the trade. So, I agree. I think going in there selling premium naked is really, really tough right now. It's just because there's so much volatility.
Well, there it is, and it also comes down to, you know, a question of size. I mean, I'm gonna say, but you know, in full truth, which I always try and do, mean, I would never do that for anybody in that I manage money for, and I wouldn't really have any of my clients do that. However, if somebody's got $1 million account and says, I want to sell the straddle once, well, okay, go ahead.
Right.
But the idea is you're not, I mean, you don't really have too many people to do that, but some people might. And if the size is small enough, you know, like, what's the difference? But I think it's more important, I think Mike is going to say this too, but I'll lead him into it. You can't just look at the VIX. Because you don't get to trade the VIX. Well, you can trade the VIX. But my point being is when you have a simple discussion, when I used to give lectures like you do all the time, Mike, I used to do that when I was young. Mm-hmm. You'd go somewhere and a simple question, like you'd put IBM up on the board and you'd say, IBM is an eighth to a half, last trade, 3/8. Where's IBM trade? And somebody would go, well, 3/8. I go, If you, what's your buy price? What do you mean? I said, if I want to buy it, what do I have to pay? Well, 3/8. No. That's historical accuracy. That's a historical fact. It just traded there. Doesn't mean I can trade it. Right now it tells me if I want to buy it, my buy price is a half. If I want to sell it, my sell price a quarter.
Exactly. And people look at me like, the market is trading. Totally agree.
So I think if you don't have nobody wants a broker anymore. Although PTI, we still have full service brokers, and I think, obviously, where you guys are, you can find somebody who can help you out. The point being is, if somebody calls and says, I want to buy this particular option or sell it in the Spider, SPY, or the S&P where the VIX is calculated from, you want to know the volatility on your option. Because they're not all 27. You're going to find some that are 40, might be this afternoon or Friday, and you might find some that are 18 out 2 years or something. So,
right. Yeah. Every single option has its own unique volatility associated with it. So, as you move along the option chain, you will find that volatility doesn't necessarily move linearly. It can move logarithmically. It just depends on how the market's digesting that volatility. So, we can't say what every strike price is going to be. We have to let the market sort of dictate that. So like you said, Tom, whatever the last print isn't necessarily where it's trading. You got to look at where that market currently is right now.
Right. I've not looked. I should have looked before I asked this question, but I have a feeling you already know. Where are we? June something, second. What are you, have you spotted? I haven't gone out that far. I should. Have you spotted any sort of a diverse break in the volatility come November?
Yeah, so what you can do is you can look at the various option chains, and each one has its own expiration date associated with it, and it also has its own volatility associated with it. So what we can do is we can basically look at the whole chain and then look at what the volatility is for each chain. Here's the interesting thing, and it's actually not surprising. This is what we would expect to see, but sometimes when you have a lot of volatility, all that risk gets placed right in the front month because everyone's more worried about what's going to happen tomorrow than they are what's going to happen a year from now because the risk is so high, which is what we saw for a long time. The market's starting to normalize a little bit, and what we're seeing now is volatility is actually a little bit lower in the front month, so the stuff that's expiring in the next 15 days or so, you have volatility hanging out. It starts around 25%, moves to about 27%, but once you get out to 45 days, we start moving to 29-30% in volatility and goes a little bit higher from there. So volatility is in a state of what we would call contango, and contango just simply means that the price of volatility is moving higher as we go further out in time, which is what we see the VIX doing 82% of the time. It's in contango.
It's funny that you say that. When we did our shameless plug here from a while ago, and I'm doing a lot of it now too for people, Mike. But when we originally did the Protected Index program, we started in '97, And we did it all the way through 2009, really. And then we didn't do it for a while because the reason why we didn't do it is historically, your historically and my historically are two different time periods. But historically, to me, if the volatility in a stock was, say, 18, say it was IBM or something, you might have 18 and a half, you know, this month, if especially if you had a little news, you know, coming through, not earnings or something. But and as time went by, it would be 17 out a year, year and a half. The leaps would be a little bit lower, you know, because it was easier. Your models are better over time, right? Or should be.
Sure. Yep.
And then all of a sudden, you know, corresponding to Obama getting in office, and I don't think anything to do with him, really. All of a sudden now, people, the near-term volatility was amazingly slow or low, yet it would go up going out. It was almost like, we're walking from here to Oregon with our wagon. We know there's a cliff somewhere out there, but just not today. And that went on for, it was always the next election. It was the next something. People were much more worried about the world out a year than they were tomorrow, which is really odd. I mean,
it is odd. And, you know, when that happens, you say, you know, you kind of look at it and it doesn't make a lot of sense that, that people are, you know, afraid of something coming up, but they're not pricing it in today, or right. At least it doesn't feel like it's getting priced in today. But when you have something like, say, a presidential election, everyone knows in November there's a big uncertainty coming up. But when we're trading a 45-day cycle right now, it expires in July. It expires July 17th of this coming July. So that doesn't overlap the election. So the election's not going to have any impact on it. But when you go, so right now volatility is at about 27, 28 in the next 45 days, and it's about 30 when you go out to 45 days. And then when we go to November cycle, we're at about 32-33%. So it does go higher, but it is weird when you have an event, or a, we might call it a binary event. We saw that with like Brexit, for example, was a binary event where it all came down to, say, a vote. And we knew it was going one way or the other based on that vote. It almost acted like a earnings event.
Well, we thought it was a binary event. Here we are 2 years later and it still hasn't happened.
Yeah, that's a good point. I still remember the night Brexit went out, and as easy as you think it would be to sell that currency when the market is really, really volatile, look, the currency collapsed, what, 1,500 ticks,
yeah,
or something like that. And it was very difficult. You look at that trade and you say, that would have been a great short. It would have been great to get short that and hold it through Brexit, but the reality of trading outright future contracts during extreme volatility, you better have deep pockets, and you better be willing to give yourself a lot of room to be wrong, which makes it a much more difficult trade than probably it seems. And especially when you're talking trading futures. Futures are big products, so if you're going in there to trade, recognize that the margin's relatively low because it uses what's known as span margining. So span margining allows for exceptionally lower levels of margin given the notional value of these contracts.
Right. If I'd have known you guys, I blame you for this, by the way, you and Jeff. If I'd have known you guys as well back then, I think I would have done pretty well, because a good friend of mine from the Federal Reserve was over doing some speaking, and he was my Jimmy Olsen Cub reporter, like on the scene, and he was in London. And everybody was, you know, we're voting against Brexit, blah, 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 blah. All the people in the financial community that he was talking to. Well, he's a real history buff. So he took the train down to Portsmouth to see Admiral of the Trafalgar's sailing ship and all these. I guess they got a couple of antique, older war vessels down in Trafalgar. I mean, I've never been over there. I'd love to go down there. And he says the minute the train exited London, everybody was voting Brexit, and it's amazing. All we heard was there were the people coming out of London, and the you know, that's the sample we were getting here, right? And I would have voted, or voted, I would have bet, you know, not a fortune, but I'd have thrown some scratch on they were going to vote to get out. And I think I'd have got pretty good odds, wouldn't I?
Yeah, you know what's interesting? So I remember this trade. So here's what happened. If Brexit came out and they voted no Brexit, the market, we would have expected the market to go a little bit higher because there was some risk taken off with the fear of Brexit actually being approved. And so when the vote actually came out, the market had already priced in the opposite action. So what the bet actually became was, I'm going to sell this, and if I'm wrong, I'm betting that the market's already priced in most of this event, so I won't be as wrong as I could potentially be right. So it became an interesting risk to reward type trade, and it, as it turned out, it was a very good trade had you been able to hold on to it and stay short.
Well, I mean, just wasn't there a binary bet? I'm talking about just betting on the election or betting on the vote.
Yeah, that was an enormous move too. The presidential election three and a half years ago.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And I think everyone who was trading back then remembers we saw an enormous spike in the market, followed by an enormous sell-off, and it was a very, very volatile night. Anytime the market gets surprised, you'll see a tremendous amount, a flurry of activity. It becomes very difficult for retail traders because a lot of our platforms don't have that professional suite. I will say I don't plug much about our company too often, but our platform, Tastyworks, is one of the fastest out there, so we don't typically have that problem, but it is a problem when markets really start moving. I mean, I had a professional trading platform for years, and it still would slow down when there was a lot of activity. So trying to be in there for moment-to-moment trading when you're retail trader, it's a little more difficult, I think, without having all those fancy packages, because you got to realize most professional traders out there are using not point and click as much as they're also running algorithms. So there's a lot of different types of trades going on.
Mike, if you were if I made you Solomon tomorrow, and you were to compare the world when I started, when you traded from 9 to 3, and virtually, I won't say all, but a significant percentage of the trade was customer to customer, versus now.
Yeah.
Which would you prefer?
I mean, when you look at how the market is now compared to how it was, I think because the level of activity increased so much, and I would almost say, you know, is there more efficiency now? I guess you could make the argument there is more efficiency now, but there's less stability, it also seems. It seems like there's a little more volatility in the market now than probably there was when the market traded a little more rationally back, I think. I don't know. Did it trade more rationally back when we're talking your
well, you had a lot of standing orders because people essentially trusted the market. So
right.
if you don't see that anymore.
No,
if you looked at an IBM, I got it trading up 81 cents, 125.70. Say, I'll go back to my unit. I'll say 125.75. Well, there'd be a lot offered at 26. There'd be a lot bid at 25.5. And the further out you went, there might be all kinds of stuff bid for at 24. And a lot offered at 28. I mean, those orders, people felt comfortable leaving them in the market. And I don't see that happen at all. Now, plus, when I traded for 19 years in the OEX, which nobody even knows what it is anymore, but for a long period of time, that was the second biggest exchange in the country, that pit. 300 some people in there, and we traded more than the rest of the SIBO. We traded more in that pit than the entire Amex, Pecos, Philly, pretty much combined. And
I came to visit in 2000. This is right before I started my career. And I remember seeing the OEX pit, and I was fascinated by the amount. There was so much activity in the OEX pit compared to everything else. It was cool back then to see.
Well, I mean, I'm going to say that it was the singular best retail product ever designed, because something like 68-72% of all the trades were customer to customer. So when you talk about market makers setting the price, they didn't set anything. Right? It was all, but there was, the, every broker had a big stack of orders in their hand, of, you know, type of thing. Now, you didn't have as many strikes as now. You didn't have weeklies or anything, so brokers could, with a couple of clerks, could almost handle it manually. You know, which with the bazillion strikes now, you would never be able to do that week to week. But by the same token, now every single trade of a stock is traded twice. I mean, there's somebody gets ahead of it, even penny wide. Somebody takes it to another exchange. They traded ahead of the, of the, of the. I mean, you didn't have, you didn't, well, compare the rules. Right now, if you put an offer in an IBM at 125.75, it could trade at 125.74999 for a month, and you're not going to get traded with.
Exactly.
Because people, the professionals have a narrower bid ask than you do. That was never the case. And actually, if you were at 125.75 and put the order in the book, you the rule were you got traded with first before any of the professionals. So you had an advantage being a retail person. You don't have that, you don't have that advantage.
I think
now,
you know, market makers got rewarded for the to provide liquidity for the transaction, and it's almost become an impossible human task to provide liquidity now, because you do have those computer programs penning the market, or even doing it in decimals around bids and asks. So it becomes almost these trading games that are basically people trying to game the system, and you have a lot of participants trying to game the system. So trying to provide liquidity as a retail trader, it becomes an extremely difficult potential trade.
Well, if the only reason somebody's going to take your 75-cent offer is because they don't want to trade it a half a cent ahead of you, is because it's already 27 bid.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see it. You know, it's not, if I buy stock for people in a protected index program or an index, indexes are pretty narrow. You know, so not, you're not getting, you know, you're not in
you're not giving up edge.
No, you're not giving up that much. But the fact is, you're giving up something. Now it's, you know, it's less than a penny and so forth. But really, what you're giving up is the fact that nobody will have a standing order in there. So there isn't somebody who feels comfortable being a quarter point away or half a point away. So what you give up is these runs where if somebody starts buying stuff. Plus, in those days, there was a gentleman's rule that if somebody came in the pit and you were, you know, eighth bid, you know, 60s or something, and you go, I'll sell you 25, and the guy will go, anything more than eighth, he'll say, I got 1,000 to buy at a quarter, and he would turn to you and say, make that eighth a quarter. Just because they wouldn't run over you to get to the price they actually did.
Got it. Now
that's the national sport, right? If somebody's going to pay 127 for IBM, you want to gobble up all the offers between there and 127. The thought of giving the person in there who's offered a 126 to print at 127, I don't think that's gone away to dodo bird, isn't it?
Right. And the crazy thing is, you know, when you were giving your example, we're talking about a while ago in the pits. The spreads were wider, but it did also avoid those types of games where every participant's penning the market, and the margins are so amazingly tight that only the biggest of the big players can really participate in any type of liquidity providing trade that possibly is your approach.
But you know, Mike, here's the thing from an older dude. When people see a market or they see gambling, you know, which is, you know, not the same really as investing, but when they see gambling, people don't necessarily care if it's efficient. They care if it's straight. And I think now the game is so efficient in a lot of areas that you end up probably getting better prices than, quote, you used to. But there's also a reason why with a bazillion products for my clients, I don't know what you do with yours, I pretty much restrict myself to 7 or 8 of these ETFs because that's the only place I can find liquidity. I avoid like the plague some of these stocks that are 2 bid at 4 and some option. which used to be an illegal market. I mean, you know, you could never get away with that in a floor. I mean, it could be, but now you can. I mean, the guys that are so big, they're bigger than the regulators. They do whatever they damn well please. So, I mean, you can't go off the reservation at all. I mean, you better stick with the stuff that is liquid. But what I'm saying is, if you brought a bunch of old farts to the floor, like my stepfather, my mother, not calling my mother an old fart, but if you brought them to the floor and the phone rings and there's an order, somebody writes it down, you give it to a runner, they run out there, they see the broker auction, fight for their trade while they were doing it. They knew that having somebody out there, even if it was a good-looking girl running out there with that order, was not, quote, efficient as it could be, but it was straight.
Yeah.
They were willing to take the hit on the efficiency to make sure that they were in a straight game. Right? I mean,
right. It was straight. And that makes a big difference. You know, I was talking earlier about Brexit, but when you have other news events or numbers coming out, and you know this, Chief, when those numbers come out, there's a flurry of activity that makes no sense. I mean, it makes no sense. You have buyers and sellers coming in, but a lot of that is just algorithmic trading that pushes the market up, pushes the market down, moves it around in a manner that's based on order flow. It becomes hard to have a straight market when you're trading around any type of volatility right now. Especially when we have real volatility, that's when the human element really comes in. When you look at the beginning of
Mike, but hold on to this thought, bud. We got to go to break. We'll pick it up after. SP Futures up 13, NASDAQ Futures up 25. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello, everybody. Stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Alley, Mr. Jack Silverman on the board. S&P was up 14.75. We were down last night, but we spun around overnight, which we've been talking about with Mr. Mike Hart. NASDAQ futures up 29.25. Dow futures up 145. Europe, we got big rallies, but careful on this DAX number because they were not open yesterday. They're up 426, 3.7%. FTSE up 61%. CAC around up 92. That's almost 2%. Over in Asia, of course, you know, they poured another $1 trillion into their economy / market a week ago, so it's still running its way through. Nikkei up 263, 1.2%. Shanghai up 5.2%. Hang Seng up 263. Bonds, 10 years, 0.68, so that hasn't moved. Bund minus 0.41, that hasn't moved. In Japan, plus 0.005, so that hasn't moved either. Oil up 83 cents, 36.27. Highest we've seen in a little while. Brent up 97 cents, 39.29. Natural gas, 177. RBOB, $1.10. Gone are the days of 78 cents there, at least for a while. Gold down a dime now only, 17.50. Silver down 9 cents, but still pretty high at 18.73. I'm going to ask Mike when we get back why the future in the silver is got almost $1.60 premium to the SLV, the ETF, which is a little high. Copper up almost a penny to 247, so copper is leaking up just a little bit. Jack, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Yeah, not off to the greatest start this morning for traffic. We got in the effort to restrict downtown access, there are multiple closings on 18th Street between Canal Street and Wentworth Ave, Cermak Road East between State Street and King Drive. On the Stevenson North at Lakeshore Drive was the exit ramp closed, pushing people on to Lakeshore Drive, where there are more closings between Stevenson Expressway and Monroe Drive. This is all causing major traffic on Lakeshore Drive, the Stevenson, and the Edens going into the city. On the bright side, it's quite a nice day in Chicago, 71 degrees, mostly sunny with a high of 90. And in Phoenix, 86 degrees, partly cloudy with a high of 108. This day in sports, we'll go on to 2010. The Chicago Blackhawks go visit the Philadelphia Flyers in Game 3 of the Stanley Cup Finals. They go on to lose the game 4-3, but end up winning the series and winning the Stanley Cup Finals in 6 games. Chief.
Mike, last night I was watching a game that I never even... It was a national feed and the game of the week in 1969. I didn't even know they had those. But it was in black and white, long after WGN had become color. And it was the Cubs against the Phillies, Fergie Jenkins against Rick Wise. It was my kind of baseball. Rick Wise was 15 seconds between pitches. Fergie was under 11. Imagine that today, bud.
That's a pretty amazing stat right there.
Yeah, I mean, now they're like, the relief pitcher's got to be 30 at least. So it's it takes three more times between pitches. One of the games are take so long. But
Wonder. I mean, well, what do you think? Do you think baseball is going to is now the time that they finally? Because we've had the conversation before, even the conversation with baseball. Hey, it's a long game, and it's also difficult to get fans to sit there for that long. Maybe the game needs to be shorter to try and entice
a generation to watch it, that maybe this generation has more time constraints because we spend a lot of time on our doing other things with the internet and whatnot.
But why, it's the same as when you look at, the two stadiums, well, I used to go to Sox Park too, the old one. You look at the way that the Wrigley Field, well, now it's different. These guys have spent a lot of money on it. And you look at Notre Dame Stadium, for instance, where I spent a lot of time watching football games. The Notre Dame Stadium, it's a 2x6 squeezed in with no room. There's no place in there for you anywhere except on your little spot. Same thing at Wrigley Field. It was designed for you to walk in, get a dog, get a beer, get another couple beers while the guy walks by. You're there for 2.5 hours and you're gone. It was you didn't need a place to go hang out with the girls, although that would have been nice, because it's a 4-hour event. I mean, football is, there's 12 minutes of action in a 3.5-hour time slot, sometimes 3:45 or 4 in college. I was reading this thing once. They broke down what was on camera during a college football game. It was like 11.8 minutes of action, which means the ball snapped to tackle, to the whistle. It was 20 minutes of staring at the coach's face, to get his expression. It was like 25 minutes of the cheerleaders, which is okay. I can roll with that.
All right, yeah.
And how much was, it was like 40 minutes of commercials. I mean, how big of a time slot can you put 11.5 minutes of action? Can we go to 6 hours? I mean, what are we doing here? Every play is a replay or two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's crazed. Especially with the hour I get up in the morning, try and watch one of these games at night while you're by yourself. But if you go sit in a bar, and I could sit there and talk for hours, and I would never be bored watching with the game. Sort of as we're kind of watching, but the idea of you sitting there and all of a sudden you're by yourself, and the seventh inning comes around, there's four pitching changes, and the seventh inning takes a half hour. I challenge anybody, even your age, to not be sleeping, sitting in the chair.
Completely agree. In fact, I live pretty close to Wrigley Field, so I love going there. Exactly, sort of how you said, Tom. I usually make it like a 2-2.5 hour event, and then I'm off to Wrigleyville, maybe finish the game up at a bar or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's been the normal routine for 20 years that I've been in Chicago. It's fantastic. It works great in Chicago. But do you think there's any changes coming down the line now that they have an opportunity to actually make changes?
Well, they have. I mean, what Mr. Weber says, and he's all over this stuff, and I don't know if you ever listen to the show, and we have Josh Nelson on the Southside. You know, guy knows more about baseball. I mean, I thought I knew something about baseball. I probably know 10% of what that guy knows. It's unbelievable. But but Matt says now that the deal is that they want the relief, especially the relief pitchers, to take as much time as they can between pitches, because if you take over 30 seconds versus 20, that you've regenerated enough, because all these guys are doing now is throwing as hard as they can every pitch.
Right.
So he says you actually get a half a mile an hour more recovery on your fastball if you take another 10 seconds. So once you start, you know, throwing that in the mix, I don't see how you ever come back, to be honest with you. I mean,
that's a good point, yeah.
But I mean, you know, Fergie just, he had his next four pitches planned out. He'd get the sign. He never shook Hundley off. They were on the same page. And then went the pitch. Slider outside, slider outside, bust him inside with a fastball. So, I mean, this was the routine. It was like Greg Maddux. The only guy modern like that was Mark Burley, probably. You know, Greg Maddux was. But hey, we have a question from one of the Luckbox readers. Jack, what was the, we got a tweet for, it's a tough question, so I'll give it to Mike first, and then I'll help.
Yeah, it says, "Hey, Chief, tell us what numbers shook you the most from the Fed's most recent money, stock, and debt measures release."
I'm not so sure about any particular one, but, Mike, I'll let you go first. This morning I got an email from somebody that says, "What's the matter with these people? They bought debt in Hertz, and Hertz is going under."
Right. So, I missed the beginning part of the question.
It has to do with what numbers do I look at when I criticize the Fed? I guess is the question. Is that a fair translation, Jack?
Yeah. No. 100%. Yeah. So, looking at what the Federal Reserve, what do they have control over? They have control over interest rates.
What are they supposed to have control over, and what are they taking control over?
Well, they're in charge of the money supply, of course. So is their ability to decide what rate is going to be lent out and the cost of money, effectively.
All right, let me start. So, let me go at the beginning here. That's not exactly true. And Mike, kick me if I'm wrong here, because you're younger and were in school after me. The Fed really, they have an amazing function when it comes to money flows and check cashing and all those kinds of things that 90% of what the Fed does, we really couldn't do without. But then there's the policy part of it. The policy part of it is they maintain, an orderly, shall we say, money market. Because for doing three things, they set reserve requirements of if you put $1,000 in the bank can only lend out whatever, they have to maintain the reserve requirement. So if the reserve requirement is 20%, and if I put $1,000 in and Mike runs in for a loan, they can only loan him 800 if the reserve requirement is 20%. So if he puts the 800 back in, they can only loan the next guy 640. Mm-hmm. So, but actually the money supply goes up and down in our system by activities of banks. Because if I walk in with $1 million worth of gold that I just mine somewhere, which of course I don't have a gold mine or anything, and plunk it in the bank, and they turn around and lend $800,000 to Mike, well, how much money is there? It used to be $1 million, and now there's $1.8 million, right? So the bank, bank in effect makes money, okay, because now there's $1.8 million. Now what the Federal Reserve does is manage this liquidity and manage them, and they do that through the reserve requirement, through the discount window. Somebody borrowing from the Fed, if a bank lends a little too much overnight, all of a sudden they say, "Oops, we don't have our requirements. We're only, 19.9%." They can borrow that money from the Fed and pay interest. Okay, so the Fed can raise and lower that interest rate. The other thing that the three things classically they did were money market operations, which means the New York Fed would say, God, there's too much money in the system. We're trying to maintain a federal funds rate of 3%. Looks like there's too much money out there. It's dropping to 2.9. The Fed will go out and they will sell, bonds they have in inventory. You always were bonds before, U.S. government securities. So what happened there is when they sell the bond, you pay the Fed, the money comes out of the system. They essentially drain the system. Or if they go out and buy bonds, they put money back in the system. So just maintaining, if they were to say the federal funds rate is going to be 3%, which now it's like zero, just maintaining it at 3%, given the fact that banks can go up and down with the money supply on their own, is actually a serious job, right, Mike? I mean, just to do that, it's not like you could plunk me in there tomorrow and I'd be able to do this by myself. I mean,
that's a great point, yeah.
But you just doing the let's say the relatively simple task they were charged with is a big deal. It's a huge deal. It's not easy. But now they've gone over the rainbow. The idea now they're not just talking about liquidity. If there's a market problem, it's one thing to say, Mike has a guy who wants to sell his muni bond or something, and all of a sudden there's no muni bond market or something. Well, for the Fed, the Fed to put liquidity into that market and say, okay, we're going to put some money in, we're going to buy this in the meantime because there ought to be a market here. That, I'm going to say, is probably in their charter. But if they're going to say, oh no, we're going to maintain muni bond prices at 99, that's not in their charter at all, I don't think. It's one man's opinion. So the idea that you're going out and buying specific bonds because you don't want them to drop in price, there's no liquidity problem there. I mean, right now, there's no way anybody has a problem getting a loan because there's no money in the system. So we're not talking about liquidity here. We're talking about them maintaining value, asset pricing, of propping the market up. But that's a whole different brand of ball that I don't agree with at all. Now, part of it is because, I think the guy must have got paddled in the White House by the president when he was there that night 4 months ago. And all of a sudden now, they're going to keep the stock market up no matter what to get this guy elected again.
That's what I was just going to say. You look at the stock market prices, and it almost feels, I'm not going to make the claim that this is what's going on, but it almost feels sometimes like the Fed is trying to support the market or is playing the market as opposed necessarily to maybe other avenues that they might go down for interest rate hikes or cuts.
Well, if you want to be, Mike and Jeff are never going to be are going to go out on a limb and be an ass, but I might. Okay, I'm going to say that we got 40% of the people in this country that are making under $40,000 a year out of work. We've got massive problems, but the people who have wealth, the wealth has managed to hang in there. And they're hanging in there because the Fed is propping it up. I mean, if we all of a sudden had a 30% drop in the market, the hue and cry among the people, I'm going to say, in charge would be nobody cares about the 40% unemployment. I won't say nobody. Very few people really care about the 40% unemployment under 40,000 unless you happen to be one of them. Or your brother, or your sister, or your mom, or your dad, right?
And then I think from an economic point of view, there's less worry about the 40 million jobs lost because the anticipation is the economy is going to rebound in the next few months, and all these people who have been displaced are hopefully going to be employed.
Yeah, how many times per day, if you listen to the three news channels, does some bump, I use a nice term, some bump say, everything must be okay because the market's looking down the road and look how good it's going to be. Everybody, even though they're broke, should feel like they got money and just wait 6 months and you'll be fine.
You hear that argument every day.
Every minute, every hour of every day.
Yes, absolutely.
And if the Fed tomorrow were to call up Chase or Citi or one of the people that live by this largesse and they say, how much do you want to buy today? And they were to say, no, we're selling. I guarantee you. These spoos would go from up 9 to down 90.
Yeah. I 100% agree. There's a certain type of herd mentality that's in the market right now. And I say that because the range of movement. You have a tremendous amount of volatility in the market, but the range of movement, and if you look over the past couple of weeks, the range of movement's been really, really tight. There hasn't been a lot of these large... And I'm saying large relative to what we have seen, because what we're seeing now is much larger than a year ago or 2 years ago. But relatively speaking, from what we've seen recently, this market's been in a very, very tight range for a while. So that means we're at a point where there are a lot of buyers and sellers right at this point. So it'll be interesting to see maybe who wins out. Do the buyers or the sellers win on this price level? That's obviously there's a little battle going on right around these levels.
Well, Mike, you go back, was it 4 weeks when we got the first, maybe 5 weeks, we got the first really bad unemployment claim number. It was like 3.8 million or something in 1 week, or some massive number. Damn near the same press release, the Fed said they're injecting $2 trillion into the system. So the market, instead of being probably down, miserably, actually was up because, oh my God, we got another $2 trillion. Well, it wasn't 2 to 3 weeks later where we're starting to leak again, and all of a sudden we had some European markets didn't look so hot and some issues over there with a couple of the countries' debt. And all of a sudden the ECB comes out with $1 trillion, basically, right? So that's what happened. So we're still, that was only, last week or the week before. So we're still kind of working off that trill. But at some point here, are we reaching a point where it's $2 trillion like a month just to keep us here? I mean, it seems like I was
trying to put context around that myself. And I've spent a while trying to figure this out. But what I've kind of come to is it roughly costs about $1 trillion for a month. There's about $1 trillion of wealth that, we need to make up for that we've lost. So about $1 trillion a month. So they threw about $3 trillion at a problem that only really costs $1.5 trillion right now.
Yeah. I mean, you look at these broad numbers, and I look these up, Mike, because I know you like this stuff. I went to my, of course, you forced me to go, you did, you didn't even know you did it. To my debt clock. Well, while I'm here, I'm on the Federal Reserve balance sheet page. All right, we've gone from, let me get down to 1 year here so I can read the damn thing. We've gone from 4.3 trillion, and let me get this, go down a little spot here. We've gone from we've gone from 4.1 trillion on February 26th to 7.1 trillion now. So it's two.
That's an amazing fact. That alone is an amazing fact.
The GDP in 1980 was 2.8 trillion or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the Fed has put that kind of money in the system. But just we see where we're going here. When I'm always talking about the inflation, and Carl helps me out with some of this, but I mean, I'm going to go to my thing that I'm mad at Mike because he made me go here. Don't ever do this. Don't ever go to the USDebtClock.org because it all does is piss you off for the day. The M2 money supply now, $17.7 trillion, which is a big number. 2000, it was 4.8. So it is 3.7 times as big.
Mm-hmm.
The current GDP is, let me get the real number here, I think it's like $21 trillion. U.S. gross domestic product, $20.9 trillion. In 2000, it was 9.5. So the money supply is up 3.7 times, and the GDP is up 2.2 times. So don't believe at all what the CPI number is since 2000, because it'll say we should be up, you know, like 50%, and in fact, this thing's almost double. We're not even close, right? So, I mean, you can't even. One is up, you know, double, and the other is up 50%. So, the idea that that our inflation is steady and low, don't think that, because that money is somewhere. Yeah. It's valuing assets. It's valuing something. I think a big percentage of it is going into the healthcare system. I mean, we have people that we pay their salaries that will tell us that healthcare is 7% of the CPI, and yet it's been 20% for 15 years. So if that gorilla in the room, if you turn around and say that the healthcare for people is 20% of the CPI, I'm going to say that the inflation will triple going back 15 years, Mike.
I think that's a fair assessment. And you bring up inflation because I think that's what everyone really has their eye on. What happens when you add $3 trillion of liquidity into the system? What does that cause? And then you also have to look at the other side of the equation. You mentioned wealth earlier, and that ultimately is what the market is valuing, is the creation of wealth. And we, as the country remains shut down or the productivity is really, it's low because right now no one's working right now. So the amount of wealth being added to the system is going down, but you have the amount of money in the system going up. That is a recipe for inflation. And I think inflation is going to be the big number that the Fed has. It is the big number they have, and it's going to remain the big number that they have their eyes on.
How long can they keep lying? How long can they keep lying to us?
I think it's gotten so big at this point. There's their hand is more or less given to them. I think when you look at the game theory of what they can do, they're running out of options.
Let me make the question more specific. When are we going to get a CPI number of like 2.5% in a month?
That's a great question. I couldn't really even answer that.
Real quick, because you haven't been on in a while. Next time you come on, maybe I'll go through this again, because I actually went and redid my numbers. I found, once in a while, even I find something on the internet, not like you guys that know how to use it real well. I found a site that has every college in the country and their rates for room and board and tuition going back to 2000. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. How I manage to find this, I can't believe it. Even discounting the little tricks like people from out of state paying way more, that kind of thing, which I don't even think they did in 2000. Everybody got the same price. If you did that, your college education is 2.8 times what it was in 2000, roughly. And yep. I also went back and I looked at the cost of a business to provide healthcare to somebody like you or me. Almost the same number, Mike. It's like 2.8 times. And hardest thing I tried to do is go back and try and figure out what elementary education is or primary. And the only way I could figure that was to figure it's 60% of property taxes. So I tried to do a property tax study. And I didn't know Illinois. I mean, the rest of the states, I threw my hands up. I couldn't get there. But I got the property taxes in Illinois roughly 2.8 times what they were. Matter of fact, they're all the same number. Healthcare, higher education, and lower education are all up 2.8 times in 20 years. And yet the CPI tells you that the CPI is up 50%. And yet it's really...
Right. There's a real disconnect with that. And to be honest, I don't know how long it can stay like this. I think there's definitely chinks in the armor, and I think this shutdown has really brought out some of the problems that the economy's been supporting. So I think if nothing else, maybe some sound economics will ultimately come from this disaster of a situation.
We're trying, you and me. Who else is? Mike, it was a pleasure having you. Might have to get you your own day. We'll leave Jeff on Tuesday. SP Futures up 10. NASDAQ Futures up 13. Besides, first night series is open. You and I are there, buddy. Outside.
Hey, sounds great, Chief.
We'll social distancing, whatever we have to do, but whatever. We'll do it. We'll be back tomorrow with Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.